Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are just trying to figure it out as they make their way through life, comedy, limited edition jokes that we like bring onto the podcast for one episode, sometimes two, and then just drop. We never bring them back. We don't have a lot of running bits. We've got a lot of limited edition bits on this podcast.
We're good with the OGs, the originals, and we keep them OG. Like,
that's true.
Yeah, we don't. I don't know. We could put out a greatest hits album, maybe at like episode 50.
That'll go into the Spotify playlist, you know, yeah. That we talked about every song that we've mentioned, and then also every comic we've mentioned, and then just randomly interspliced, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, that'd be great. Like that's little funny. Skits. It'll be like a Ludacris album, little skits all of a sudden.
I miss that. I miss those.
I did too. I did too. I'm going to take my Invisalign out. I'm feeling very self-conscious for some reason all of a sudden. So
I don't. Yeah, you look fine.
Thank you.
Invisalign or not. You're recording in not the normal place that you are, but in Louisville, Kentucky.
I'm in the greater Louisville area, and I'm recording from my brother's place, and happy to say that he is out of the hospital and back home, and has been home for a couple of days. So just hanging out and making sure that he's cool and driving him to appointments and all that kind of stuff while he's still under restrictions. So
yeah. Yeah. So just like full caretaker mode, basically.
Yeah, but he's pretty good, honestly. Like, it's more just, it's a lot of safety. It's like a lot of just in case. You know, there's a couple of things that he needs help with, but he's doing pretty good. He's, can get around with his walker, you know, like to a certain extent. I don't even know how much he needs that, you know, like it's just another like safety precaution, really, at this point.
Right.
So, yeah, I just need to jump in every now and then to help him with a couple of things. But yeah, it's pretty, pretty much just being around, being available. So.
Nope, man. Yeah. I've also, that's great news that he's out and he's on the up and up. I know you've been tentative with like booking shows because of the situation, but you did have some shows at Helium here in Indianapolis. I wanted to come. I couldn't make it, unfortunately, but how'd they go?
Well, I know that you were actually there. You were just downstairs at the Tommy Davidson shows, and you were texting me from downstairs like, I'd like to come up, but. It's just too good.
I gotta watch his second show. Yeah,
I'm learning how to be a player. You know, I don't know about you, but did you watch the movie How to Be a Player growing up? Like
several.
It was a big movie. Yeah, I did too. Yeah. And it turns out being a player actually more something you're born with. It turns out you can't learn how to be a player.
It was not very instructional because like Gilbert Gottfried's in the movie, and he coins the term "onion booty," which is just iconic, Gilbert.
Where it started? It started with Gilbert in that movie?
I mean, I don't think it started there, but he, you know, the booty's so good, it makes you cry.
Right. Yeah.
And his voice and his cadence is all time. It made me laugh so much. But yeah, I agree. If you look like Bill Bellamy did in the 90s, then you can be a player.
That's true.
I think he had sex like 45 times in one day in that movie. I don't know. How old was I when I saw that? Probably like 13.
Did that set up an unrealistic expectation for you on how many times the human body can actually do that?
Yeah, because then I had sex once and I was like, that's good enough for me. I don't feel like driving to someone else's house.
Yeah.
Or talking to Gilbert Gottfried or anything else. One is good for me.
Man, has any hip hop, it's about time we brought it back around to hip hop because we kind of have been doing some dalliances with Sheryl Crow and Faith No More. It's time to bring it back to what this podcast is really secretly about, which is hip hop. Has any hip hop artist sampled Gilbert Gottfried saying that? They have to. Somebody's had to have at this point.
I think there were sketches of Gilbert Gottfried on like, you know, I don't know, maybe like Nellywood or something. Because like him and Ludacris love putting comedians. Even like Kanye would put comedians just randomly between tracks. Yeah. And I don't know if people do that anymore.
I mean, the Roots did it, but they actually had Chappelle come into the studio. It wasn't like they didn't sample it. It was him actually hanging out in the studio. I think Chris Rock is also on the Roots album too, right?
Yeah.
I think doing like the intro on one of them. Yeah, I don't know. But it's just like, I just love that the fact that Gilbert might be in like part of the 50 year history of hip hop.
Yeah.
In some small way.
He's very ephemeral. Speaking of How to Be a Player, I went to see Oppenheimer. Dude, man, my dude was out here in these streets. He's like, lady, lady, lady. Like, one of the most intelligent human beings ever to walk the face of the earth, but also my man was out here.
Are you
stealing people's wives?
Are you saying that they should have, instead of calling it Oppenheimer, it should have been called How to Be an Atomic Player? Is that a better name for it?
How to Be an Atomic Player. They should have called it a Woppenheimer.
Wow. Okay. All right.
He was out there.
I didn't even know he was Italian. Okay. All right.
That's good. I'm just
trying to nudge us closer to like more views and more downloads by being occasionally sort of almost offensive. Like, you know, I think Italians are still.
Yeah, I think we won't be famous on this podcast because we'll never take the full leap.
I know. Exactly.
We'll never like go full bore into it.
Yeah, we got to go soft. We go soft ribbing only. And then,
and then we apologize.
And then we apologize immediately. And
should we take that out?
Edit it out. yeah, man, I did have shows at Helium. They were great. It was in the small room and Bill Bellamy was downstairs. I did go into the, you know, that balcony where you can overlook into the big room.
Tommy Davidson.
Sorry. Yeah. Did we say Bill Bellamy?
No,
yeah,
you said.
Bill, I said Tommy Davidson because I was, yeah, for some reason I was connecting him with, is he in How to Be a Player though?
I don't think so.
Oh, see, in my mind, I've not been sleeping much. So yeah, for some reason I was thinking that was a Tommy Davidson joint, but no. All right. Well, it was still some fun riffing. I'm glad we got it in there anyway.
Matt, we'll say it once, we said it again, all black people, all black comics from the 90s.
Yeah, I was gonna say you got it. Yes, I mean not all, just the ones in the 90s that were in comedy. That's I'm looking up the cast list of How to Be a Player, and I'm hoping to God Tommy Davidson's in it, like in a bit part. Well, cast and crew. Let's maybe he was a key grip. I don't know.
Oh like, man,
Bernie Mac is in there, of course.
Yep.
Yeah,
Bernie did everything.
Yeah. Well, he should have. He was great. Yeah, it looks like Tommy was not. All right, I apologize. I just want to take this
quick fact check
opportunity to say that this is a moment for me to learn and grow. And I know that my comments have been very hurtful to the 90s black comedy community.
Yeah, it's a big big subset of this listener base.
So I peeked in on Tommy Davidson, not Bill Bellamy. I peeked in on Tommy Davidson. And what I was going to say is he looks good, man. Like he's kind of kept. Yeah, he's got a tiniest little bit of a belly showing, you know, mm-hmm. but for a man his age, like he looks good. He was having fun, you know, up there. It was good.
He deserves to have a little bit of belly. He's like a very tiny, energetic human being who I've always respected his comedy. And he's been doing it since I've been alive. So like lean in, man, eat a pork sampler platter every once in a while. Do you?
Yeah. I mean, it's just good. I mean, I just feel bad because I let myself go so early, you know? And so it's always impressive when you see someone who's even older than me. It's like, oh, they managed to keep that together. All right, good for them. I wonder if being famous and having a lot of money and personal trainer stops. I don't know. Possibly. I don't know. That could
maybe
have something to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I watched a little bit of his set. It's silly. It was fun. You know, exactly what you wanted from it. It was very easy. Like as people were coming in, you know, there was like a little bit of a crossover. His show started at 7:30. Mine show started at 8. But as we're watching people come in, it was pretty clear to see who was going to what show. I love my fans, and by that I mean the people who got free tickets and or saw that it was the cheaper of the two options that night at Helium. But they don't put in the work and dress up as much as Tommy's fans
did. No.
Holy shit, there was a lot of church clothes, a lot of people were coming out. They were showing up for sure. Show and show out, you know.
Gator suits.
Yes.
It's also
a lot of hats.
A lot of hats.
Yeah. A lot of obstructed viewing if you were sitting behind.
Just upset.
A couple that had gone all out. Yeah.
10-gallon hats. That's funny, man.
Yeah, that's what also, I mean. A lot of cowboys.
Yeah. And you got the audience that went upstairs, which were like.
Yeah, and they're like their dirty
sweatpants. And they got their Crocs on.
Yeah.
who hosted for you?
Jose was George, was it Talafaro, something like that?
Talarico,
that's it. Yeah,
he's funny.
Yeah, he's very funny. Originally an indie comic, and now he is in Chicago, but it was the first time that I'd seen him, and he was great. He did a lot of stuff about religion and growing up in a very right-wing Catholic Church in talking about how like they sort of like weaponized him and the other students in their propaganda. And I don't want to give away the bit because that was really, it was really, really a good bit and well constructed and well done. And then the feature was Jake Smith, and I think it was his last weekend doing a feature weekend in Indy before he moves to Chicago. So, and they both killed it. They both were great. It was a fun show, top to bottom. I really enjoyed watching both shows. They both switched it up, which is nice, you know.
Yeah.
And they encouraged me to do the same. Our friend of the podcast, Tyson Cox, had messaged me that he came to hang out, but he couldn't hang out because I was in the showroom watching. And he was like, oh, I thought you were going to be in the bar like a comic, ignoring the show until you go on. So I got to see him for like 15 seconds as I like ran out to get another water or something. And but no, it was a great show. It was, you know, small numbers, but decent in that room, you know, doesn't take much. And it had fun. Yeah.
I love that room. I love that, like, I love that small room. It gets intimate, and you don't need it to be full. It's almost worse when it is full, because then it gets hot.
Oh,
it's Then it's like, you know, I don't know. But I've done it with 8 people. I've done it with 30 people, and it's always it's always fun.
Yeah.
Did you feel re-energized, reinvigorated? Did you get the spark back?
I did.
2019 mad again?
I mean, I don't even know if I even remember what 2019 me was like. I have to wait for those Facebook memories to come up every year, you know, and have it be that particular year. And then I'll know.
Hurt.
Yeah. I do feel good. I feel, you know, it's still, again, like I said, when I was kind of, you know, feeling kind of down about career stuff, it was never about performing on stage. That I still love, and I still was having fun with most of the time, you know, when it wasn't half of the shows in Wichita and half the shows in Little Rock, you know. But most of the time I'm still having fun performing, but it's just all the other stuff, and that's all been on hold, right? Like the sending out of veils and like and you know, trying to clip up clips and get a bunch of views and all that kind of stuff, because I'm, you know, we don't know how long my brother's recovery is going to be, and so I just like, I don't want to double book myself or whatever. I'm going to continue to do the shows that I already had on the books. Yeah. And then we'll figure that out with other family members or hire some professional people to come in and be with them if that's a necessary thing. But I didn't want to just make that a bigger issue or more complicated issue. So I've been feeling fine about my career because I've not been trying to do anything with my career. And I think maybe that's the key, everybody. Just be a leaf. Be a leaf in the wind, you know?
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if I don't think about it 24/7, then I can actually enjoy when I get to do this really silly thing. That's cool, man. I was at Helium. I closed out the contest last Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever day it was, and it was fun. These summer contests where you're just coming in to close out is like the easiest thing you could do in the realm of comedy, like if you're comfortable, because it's always like nearly sold out because everyone's there to support their friends. It's not like the regular comedy club audience, because, you know, these people, these aren't like comedy fans. They're there to support their friends. And sometimes that's better. Like, you're going after the contest, so all the pressure's off the audience to like laugh at the right people. There is that thing where the audience goes and they won't laugh at the other contestants. And it's obvious. It's nice when someone gets them, they like, you know, they break them a little bit, but
I think it depends on how the contest is run. You know, the Helium one, there's judges, you know, and so obviously it is on the audience's mind, like, well, if we laugh too much for this other person who's not our friend, then the judges are going to go ahead and score that this, like a higher reaction.
Well, this
right?
is so the judging starts in the semifinals. It's not it's not wholly judged. So it's so I was closing out why they're counting the audience votes.
Okay, so what's an audience votes? Yeah, in that case, like, if it's going to be audience votes, which is like how the Attic always done it, then, and they even tell you, at least at the Attic one, like, laugh for everyone that you think is funny, you know? Like, you're not, it's not going to cost your friend anything if you laugh at the other comics, you know?
Yeah.
Since it's all vote-based anyway, so that's good. And the fact that they vote for multiple people, do they do the same thing at Helium?
They do. So I think they vote for their top three.
The top three,
yeah. And they're like, the Attic does this too. It's like, no funny business. Don't, like, if you put 1-1-1, we're going to throw your ballot out. Or if you vote for everybody, we're going to throw your ballot out. Or if you vote for your friend three times, we're going to throw your ballot out. So getting to close those shows out, it's really fun. It's low pressure. I had a really fun, silly set, which felt nice. You only doing 15 minutes, which is, it's just fun. Like that's a fun set. There's like very little pressure.
Now, were you doing new stuff or was it just Home Run Derby? Were you just going up there?
It was a mix.
Okay.
They were, I didn't prepare a set. I was like, let's see what happens. So it was a mix. I threw some new stuff in the middle and then closed. You never know when you're going to be done because they have to notify you that they're done counting the votes. And I remember doing this last year and I was just like up there for like 20 minutes and no one came to get me. So I was like, well, I prepared a 20 minute set and now we just have to do, you're like on the fly thinking of a bit to do that's not like 10 minutes long, which all of my bits are. Yeah. And it's like, okay, if finally it's like I do like two more bits, they come and get me. And I was like, dude, you just left me up there for like a half hour. They're like, oh yeah, you could have got off like minute 15. It's like, could you let me fucking know?
Yeah.
Now I'm working.
Yes, exactly.
So this year I didn't prepare a set just to like keep it loose.
Yeah.
And then I could just close on one of two bits, and I did, and it was fun, and got to see. So I'm judging this year. I judged last night, and it's hard.
Yeah,
it's tough.
I've judged, I think, 2 years in a row for I did it once for Helium and once for Morty's back in the day.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and it is tough, you know, because there's a lot of good people, you know, a couple of them are easy.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get it down to the three that you think should advance. And then, you know, the way they did it when I did it, and this is probably going to be true or was true for you, was there four judges? Did they have four of them?
There were supposed to be four. I think three showed up. There are, yeah, but they also announced, I thought it was going to be like some incognito, like I could just.
Oh, no.
They announced who the judges are, like anybody cares.
And then point at you in the balcony. Yeah. So I'm like,
turn off the lights, dog.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want people to know that I was judging because a lot of these people are friends.
Right.
But and I'm coming in with that Russian energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No friends. Mark you off for it.
Oh, you're like.
Yeah. Mark you off for any
fraction. Yeah. You wobbled on the dismount on that one. So
yeah.
No.
You struggled putting the mic back in the stand.
Oh, man. I didn't like your outfit. -3 points. No.
I did have that thought on a couple of people. It's like, dude, you're not gonna try.
Yeah. When I did it, I did like I would write serious comments because there's like a thing in there for notes too about like why you're scoring them certain ways or whatever. But then occasionally I would also just write a comment to make Avery and the other like office staff who have to have to go through and process the judges' votes to make them laugh. I would just I would roast somebody basically, you know, in my comments. They're never going to see it. It's fine.
Yeah. Leaked documents. Matt Alano Martin, founder of the Limestone Comedy Festival.
Yeah. Got to have some fun. Like, you don't get paid to judge. You got to make it fun somehow for yourself, you know.
I did get a nice little swag bag, but it was, I also like did the thing where I hid to let as many contestants leave. Before I went downstairs, I was like, this is awkward. And it was like,
that's where you messed up. You should have left as soon as you turned in your paperwork. You should have, it's like, they haven't even announced it yet on stage. And you're like, text me and let me know who got through, you know? Yeah. They're going to put it on the Instagram anyway. You'll find out, you know?
It's like everybody brings their best shot at this point in the competition. So it's, you know, there were probably two clearing away people. And then there was like this giant tier of six people that all ended up getting scored like within 1 point of each other.
Yeah.
So that's, I didn't even know who was going to, the third person that was going to advance. But it was good. I enjoyed it. I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy the bloodbath that is the finals. So I'm doing that one as well. So we'll see. We'll see. But I don't really like critiquing my peers, but I took a lot of notes. Like you, like I took a lot of notes and tried to make it as detailed as possible.
Yes. Yeah.
What I don't love is when people are like, any pointers? It's like, yeah. Hey, you, no, you did 8 minutes and comedy's someone had
comedy,
a
bit of... Yeah. Comedy's subjective. You know, yeah. Like if you go up and you did what you wanted to do, then you've already won, my friend. I mean, not yeah. literally, not in this contest. You've been eliminated, but you know, yeah. metaphorically, you need to yeah. tell yourself that, you know,
yeah. you wasted your time tonight. Don't do this next year.
Yeah, I don't love being a judge. I did it both times because, you know, I love Avery, you know, and he was the GM of both of those clubs, you know, and so I did the Morty's one and I did the Helium one because he's a good dude. And if he asks for a favor, I'm there for him, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it is a little weird to be on this side of things and have to critique. And I know that we do this also with Limestone, but also we get to put so much of that on the review panel,
it's right?
Like, you know, by design, because we don't really like it. You know, it's weird to, particularly when you know the people. You know,
yeah, it's tough.
You have to be objective and be like, I know that person, and I know they're a good comic, but maybe they just didn't bring it that night. You know, we all have off nights. You know, and so you have to kind of judge it on what happened on that night on stage. I thought it was interesting, and I think it's a good balance too, because. You know, I would talk to some of the other judges or whatever and make notes, you know, compare like, oh, what do we think about that person or whatever. And there was definitely one person that I had voted that I'd put in my top three mm-hmm. to go on to the finals, I think, because I thought what they did was more original than other people. Like it just stood out and they didn't get as many laughs as everybody else. But to me, that was more important. They got laughs. They did okay. They did fine. Yeah. But it was like, I always think about the, who has that bit? There's a bit about like different jokes have different difficulty levels, right?
Yeah.
And so Paul Strickland has this joke where he's like, you know, some jokes are a one, and when you land it, it's like, okay, who cares, you know?
Right.
But then if you land a five, like that's a much bigger deal, even if like the audience doesn't totally get there. Like if right. some of them got there, it's like, that's better, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, but then the other judges were like going more from just straight up audience reaction. And so yeah. I think it works out. I mean, you know, like the people that have won that Helium contest the last couple of years, there's no contesting that they're all really good comics, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and know. Being at the finals the last couple of years, it's, yeah, it's like, there is a winner. There's a legit winner. And yeah. I think that helps with having judges and having multiple mm-hmm. judges because you get the best cross section.
Right.
Yeah. And it's hard to dispute. It's so stupid to like, I think contests are so stupid anyway, but they do mean a lot when you're in them. Mm-hmm. And if you're in them, you should take them seriously and try to do a good job. And if you don't move on, don't take it the most personal, mm-hmm. or maybe take it personal and then use it as your fuel to come back next year.
To quit comedy.
Yeah, and lose again.
I've never liked contests. You know, I got grandfathered out of the Bloomington one. I had to do it the first couple of years. You know, when you're like sort of a regular at the Attic, it's just mm-hmm. expected of you to do it. And then I missed it one summer when I was on tour with Ralphie May, and then I didn't have to do it anymore. I just go right to the closing it out part. So yeah. I've never won. I think the farthest I've ever got was like the semifinals or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't love them, but I, you know, I know why clubs do it because it's a great way to pack it out in the summer. Every club that does them.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Haley at Lucky Cat while I was there, and it's the same thing. She was like, it's crazy. Like, yeah. On a contest night, it's just going to be a sellout. We know it.
Yep.
You know, and so I understand the economic reasons why clubs do it. And if you approach it with the right mindset, and they are usually hot shows.
Yeah.
So you can, at the very least, you can get good tape out of it. You know,
you get a great tape. I am closing out the finals of the Bloomington one, and it's my favorite show I do every year because it's mm-hmm. that is like home run derby with like, all right, I got a hot crowd. Let's see if this new stuff will work.
Mm-hmm.
If I can build momentum around it, or if it's just like, I think there's a lot that you can read from a really good room
mm-hmm.
in the same ways you can't from a bad room.
Oh, it's of course. Just like, no. It's bad like, rooms are no sources of information. It's so hard to take anything from a bad room.
Yeah, I mean, outside of your own how do you handle these situations?
Right. Yes.
Like any reflective thing that I can do to turn this. Now, if you go in front of a hot crowd and just like have a mess set, that one hurts.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That hurts. You're like, I got them, but they were a little hotter for everybody else. That one, that's a long drive home.
Yeah. It hurts no matter when that happens. Cause it could be like, you could be the first comic up, like hosting on a weekend or something, or first on a showcase show and like, oh, this crowd's kind of dead. And then everyone else murders. You're like, no, it was me. It was me. And the same thing, like if you're in the middle of the show or you close the show, like when it's, they clearly like everyone else except you, like it's hard to like really rewrite that one for the history books. You know?
Yeah. That one, that's an instant delete. Yeah. I'm not listening to that tape. I'm not watching it. That's an instant delete because my ego can't handle it.
Yeah. But even if you're not closing out these contests, even if you're just in the contest, you're just getting a 5 and then like an 8-minute set. And then when you go move to the finals, it's usually something like a 15-minute set. Mm-hmm. Tape those sets, because you're on a real stage in a club. And like, it's going to look better than a 15-minute tape at like your local bar show. It just, the club. Yeah. Tapes from clubs always look better. You know, the lighting's better. The sound is usually better. It's just good. Yeah. So
speaking of tape,
yes.
I got into, I hadn't been applying to comedy festivals for like the last 2 years, but I started applying this year and got into 2.
Congratulations.
With tape from last year's set that I did at the, contest. So
nice.
100% like.
Can I guess?
Yeah, but they haven't announced it.
Oh,
so,
okay. All right.
You can guess in the chat.
Okay.
I mean, you probably know correctly. Well, I think they should announce it soon, but I've been sworn to secrecy.
Oh, okay. It's extra spicy. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was going to be, this one, but I think they may have already, okay. So that's,
did they announce and I missed it?
Maybe they didn't. I don't know. I just had a couple other people text me letting me know either they got in or they didn't get in. So
okay,
I thought, and both of the people that did, you know, send me that message, listen to this podcast. And so the one who didn't get in did say, thanks to the podcast, I know not to say anything about it publicly. I know to just pretend like I never submitted to that one.
That's great.
I guess one of them, and then
you're one for one.
I'm trying to think of what's current or what's coming up.
I don't think I would.
Oh, you have written the submit to that one probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Think on it. Okay. I'm glad that our advice is Jesus Christ, Matt.
Okay. Well, here's why I brought that one up, and I'll talk about it. Okay. Okay. So one of my guesses that was incorrect was the Laugh After Dark Festival in Las Vegas, which I applied to and didn't get into, which is fine, you know. Mm-hmm. And I got that email this week, so that's why I thought maybe it was one that you got that got the email.
I thought you were talking about the World Series of Comedy.
No,
isn't no, that
know,
in Vegas?
I know. Yes, I know you wouldn't, but only if you make it. Only if you make it to the top of that fucking scam pyramid scheme bullshit.
It is a Ponzi scheme, man.
Yeah, there are good comics who do come out of it, but they're in the minority. Like Ali Clayton did really well in it.
Yeah.
You worked with Landry, whose big credit was that I think it went 2 years in a row.
Landry's
or something
very
like that.
Funny.
Very funny. There are good comics who come out of it, but the entire thing is a Ponzi scheme. And and there's a bunch of garbage comics that they advance.
Yep.
I mean, at the time that I was in the regional thing for it in Chicago, you know, a million years ago, I watched them take two guys. I had an okay set, mess set. I wasn't surprised that I didn't advance. It was as one of the Zany's locations, but they took two dudes that were just like literally doing street jokes. They did straight up like out of street jokes, like joke book kind of jokes, and they took them over Joey L. Johnson.
Oh my god!
Literally, like 2 months later, then is on tour opening for Chappelle.
Right.
And like 6 months after that, does her Tonight Show, and she murdered. She fucking destroyed the room. Not just because like she's my type of comedy.
Yeah.
But she is more so than joke books and shit like that.
Right.
But like they tell you, and then I was like, oh, this whole thing is. I didn't feel bad about not advancing. Then I was like, oh, they want bullshit.
Yeah.
You know,
like it used to be. I don't even know if they do this. Like I know when Landry won, they promised all this work.
Mm-hmm.
That he ended up getting like half of it. They're like, you get to work all these clubs if you win, but there's no one to communicate with the clubs. They just give you an email and like, good luck. Tell them you won this thing and that you're owed. Oh, wait. Do you know how ridiculous
it is? Dude, I'm going to just start sending that email to clubs.
You owe me. Oh, wait. You sound
Hello,
crazy.
Hello, comedy seller. I was told.
You take the picture outside of the comedy seller. It's like, look who I emailed today.
but it is. No, that's not the one. There's one called Laugh After Dark, which is also, think, a fantastic festival or anything like that. But I submitted to it thinking like, oh, if I get into that festival, then it'll be an excuse to do a West Coast run, right? Because the festival's like in November. It's a good time to go out west, right? Like get out of the bad weather. And, you know, and Vegas can be whatever. It can be fine, you know. But that was my whole reason that I submitted to it. I was just like, we'll see. And if I get it, then I'll just do a West Coast run and build it around that.
Yeah.
And I didn't. So I guess I'm not going to do a West Coast run now, at least not till next year. But
yeah.
Which is
do
fine.
You, are you, so I think I applied to three. I didn't get in. I got the rejection for one. I got into two. But like, it used to just devastate me. And now when I got the rejection, I was like, oh, all right. It's fine.
Yeah.
Is that, you think that's just because when I was applying, I wasn't working full time? Or is it just because I have hardened skin and like it doesn't mean that much?
I think it's probably both. I mean, it's, you know, getting rejections from festivals. I mean, it sucks. You're like, but I'm the same with you. When I got this, it's like, oh, okay. Like I literally was just like, did not hurt or, you know, now if I had submitted to other festivals and if I submitted to a festival, like I'll use 10,000 Laughs for example, right? Mm-hmm. This is a really good festival. And
well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. And so it's a fantastic festival. Way to tip your hand. And so, all right. So I guess the one of them,
I didn't say it.
The other one is, okay.
I didn't say it,
but it's a really good festival. It has a really great reputation, you know? And I have been friends with Bob, who's like sort of the chair of it. You know, there's a couple of different people who help him run it, but he's kind of the main guy. And, you know, he would literally text me and go, sorry, man, we have too many white dudes with beards this year.
Yeah.
You know, which he's saying it to be funny, but also to give me a personalized, like, and then I would get the rejection email.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got it. You know, I understand he's like the same thing as Limestone. He's trying to have a diverse lineup. And I just wasn't the funniest white guy with a beard that year. Right. Like I needed to be in that topper. You know, that upper echelon. And so that I think bummed me out more than like because the Vegas one, I don't really give a shit either way, you know?
Yeah.
And I've gotten into other festivals and I've dropped, like not gone and done them because I'm just like, in the end of the day, I don't really care.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the festival. I think it probably hurts when you don't get into a
like
bigger
one of the
festival.
Top ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it really hurts when you see who did get in and you're like, this motherfucker? They took this motherfucker instead of me? Oh, I guess it's just a new World Series of Comedy then. I guess it's just World Series of Comedy Part 2.
I like that you went Bill Bellamy. This motherfucker.
Yeah.
You fucking this motherfucker. Yeah, that makes sense. It's, I think it hurts way more when been trying to get into a club and you've been emailing and it's just you see a comic's like, I'm middling at this place. You're like, this motherfucker. That's the new name of the podcast is this motherfucker.
Again, we would get so many more listeners if we called it that.
It's just us pointing at the camera. This motherfucker, you?
Yeah, every episode is dedicated to one person. This week we can talk about this motherfucker. But the thing with like also that when you see people working clubs that you I very early on, you know, there was a Midwest club that I really wanted to work and a lot of my friends were working, and it's like you just learn like, okay, you get in some places, you don't get in others. And it's like, you know, it's all kind of like, again, have the emotion, you know, recognize the emotion and then move on with your day. You know, same thing that we've given advice on this podcast all the time about submitting to, you know, festivals and how that works. But I think we have to constantly remember it, even at our, like you're, you know, thick skinned and this one you didn't really care about, but there's probably other ones that you had been like,
I think so.
That sucks,
yeah.
You know,
I'm not,
where
not,
you really thought you had a great shot at it.
Right.
Or something, you know,
especially like, you know, we talk about working so hard to get good tape.
Yes.
So just like I'm at a point where I should be able to get good tape and discern what is good and what might work for each specific thing that I'm submitting to.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I can't remember if I sent two different clips to each fest. I know it's from the same set. Mm-hmm. So,
but different material, you chose different material. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in my head I was going to do like some A/B testing, like, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
They like this part, but didn't like this part. But yeah, I think,
I was going to say, I think in that sort of idea of A/B testing, mm-hmm. Then the festival you didn't get into might be the most telling information. Like if you remember what that set was.
Yeah.
Like if it was one where maybe you're going hard on the Black Atheist part, where you're like, okay, maybe this is a little divisive to send a to a festival. Yeah, yeah. You know,
if you're watching the first 4 minutes of something, you're like, you got to really be invested.
Yeah.
Got to really be invested, but
yeah,
that's like what I talked about last couple of weeks. Is like I think at the beginning of the year it got to a point where it's like I don't want to bait and switch anything.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like I want to give the most accurate representation of the material that I'll probably be doing if I do get accepted. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a I don't know. It's always front of mind. It's like posting these crowd work clips, and then people come to your show and it's material, and they're mm-hmm. confused. And you're like, whose fault is it? Part of it's the audience's fault, but part of it's your fault yeah. as well. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, did you have any other shows this weekend other than closing up the contest and then judging it?
I did the Buzzkirk.
Oh, yeah. Right.
The Buzzkirk Shumley yeah. Theater. Yeah. I said, justice for my man, Matt Alano Martin.
Thank and you. And walked off stage. And then walked off stage.
I did.
Okay.
And I took that benefit money.
Yeah.
It was for
25 minutes of silence yeah. on the stage.
It was for children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so the guy that ran it isn't a comic, but he was going to do a set up top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's tough to do this if you're not a comic already, but. Yeah. To follow an 8-minute video about children with disabilities and not be able to like have the nuance to come out and be like, hey, let's ease yeah. into this.
Right.
You know, it's that sort of thing is just not something that
yeah
a non-comic knows how to do well.
And particularly on that stage, I mean, it's a big venue. So that's mm-hmm. also like it takes even actual comics you have to kind of really be on top of your game to work a bigger space like that if you're not used to it
right
and so that's there was a high difficulty curve there for him that he set up for himself because he's also the guy who booked the whole thing.
He did book it. Yeah. Yes he did. Yeah. I mean, and he was so excited and nervous. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a new, I'm not gonna say new comic, it's just an inexperienced crutch of just being like super mm-hmm. dirty.
Oh yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And a benefit he's telling show for stories. Yeah. He was pretty blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a clean show by any means.
Right.
But there is a structure and a flow of how you ease an audience into a night. Yes. Of comedy, you know, I don't know, man. It was interesting to watch because the crowd was fine.
Yeah.
They weren't great by any means, but they were fine. They were there mm-hmm. to support a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a little older, but he told his stories and then brought me up. And it did feel like kind of starting from scratch a little bit, jump starting that car.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute to like get them. I finally got an applause break. At like 6 minutes in, I was like, God damn, finally.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I went into like the more political stuff, the social stuff, they really enjoyed that
mm-hmm.
more than the like goofy shit.
Yeah.
But I definitely, while I was watching the host, I was like, I'm gonna change some shit up. Like, I can't, I gotta like ease into this a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I did okay. I wasn't like super happy with it. I was very excited for the show because I love performing on that stage.
Yeah.
I'd say that, you know, What's the bus car cold? Like 600?
623. If they put the seats in the orchestra pit, do they have the seats like in the very front part? Were there seats all the way to the stage, or was there a big gap?
Yeah, there were seats to the stage.
Okay, so it was set for 623.
And we had 100.
Okay.
So not bad, but
yeah.
It's, you know, it's tough in those giant rooms to keep the energy bouncing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of wish my set was a little longer. I did 35.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like probably 10 of that was checking in and like mm-hmm. parking them up and getting them going. Yeah, yeah. And then Brent Terhune closed it. And he's so funny. They were pretty good for him as well. Mm-hmm. There are some bits that usually get giant laughs and applause breaks that they just kind of died on.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very, 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 very good in the moment and making fun of the cause in a way that only he can do because right. It's so charming. He's yeah. like, we're here to, it's great to be here for a good cause, raising money for the church choir so they can get new baseball jerseys or whatever the hell we're doing. Like they love that
yeah.
shit.
And yeah. Cause he's not actually making fun of the cause. He's making fun right. of just like benefits in general and
yeah.
like, his own, like in his,
yeah,
own,
his own way like, of like
ignorance of not knowing. You
it's
know?
So funny.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had fun. Yeah. And then, a lot of people came up and took pictures. They did like this meet and greet.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people came up and took pictures and said they really enjoy the show, which is always nice.
Yeah.
So it was I think it was successful. I think there's room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in the Buzzkirk, if you can get, you know, even like 300 people in there, the show's completely yeah. different.
Yeah. It's rocking and rolling. If you get 300 people yeah. in there, the balcony is closed. And so it's all the downstairs is packed pretty yeah. much. And so, yeah. Yeah. 100's a little light, but I've gone to concerts there that have only had like 100 or less people. Like when I went to see Macy Gray.
Yeah.
I would say there was maybe 100 people in there.
Oh no.
Yeah. So yeah.
Damn.
So and it
Macy's
happens.
Best. Yeah.
And Macy's dope. Yeah. So that's great. And I'm glad that you survived.
I did survive.
Dug out from that.
I snuck over to the attic. Mm-hmm. Ron Funches was over there. Mm-hmm. And so I caught probably the middle third of his set.
Mm-hmm.
And I said hi to everybody and drove back. But his show was sold out. And he's a goofy, funny motherfucker. I think he's so
that's
funny.
Where all the goofy people were. They were
that's
all there.
Where they were. I know.
And
I
was the like, serious people were your show. And
we
you
could have had that show in at the attic.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you got through it, and I think maybe like the guy who put it on and hosted it, maybe he learned some lessons there, but who knows. That guy does perform like once a year. He basically once a year will put on a benefit show. It has been at the attic in the past. I think it's always for the same organization. I think he's on the board or something like that. But yeah, in the attic, you know, 100 people's great, you know. It's like rocking and rolling there for sure. So before we wrap up today, we talked about how we have been kind of remiss and not commenting on a few passings in the comedy community that have happened here recently. First and foremost, well, we did talk about my career. We did cover that already. And so so we want to talk about Tom Sobel passing away. And then I don't want to say that was not unexpected. Tom was an older guy. And mm-hmm. I think probably had some health issues for a while and hadn't been in the public eye that much. But then also Ron Sexton, a.k.a. Donnie Baker, who we have discussed on the podcast before, because only a month or two ago, there was an attempt on his life by a jealous husband who unloaded a clip into his rental car.
Yeah.
Apparently his luck did run out. And so Ron Sexton did pass away and on the road in a hotel room, which is every comedian's dream. I think we can all agree.
That's the nightmare, man.
Oh, is that the nightmare? I'm sorry.
I think that's the nightmare.
Okay. So what's the dream? Is the dream dropping dead on stage?
I think at
the very end of your set, you get your whole set in and that's your big closer.
And then you literally drop the mic.
Yeah.
If you want views, if you want to go viral on Instagram, drop dead on stage.
What if but no one's taping it? Like, and then you're like, you're in heaven, just like, no one, my camera died. The camera died in the back before I died on the stage.
Your last attempt to get a good tape.
There was a comedian a couple of years ago, I think in the UK, for some reason I'm thinking in France, but it's either in France or the UK, but this older comedian who had been around forever did literally die on stage at the end of his set. And everybody thought he was doing a bit.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. So, but no, let's talk about Tom first, though, because yep. I think that's the one that we really should talk about the most. For those people that don't know, Tom Sobel was not a comedian. He was a comedy booker and club owner throughout the, I mean, since the 80s. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who created Comedy Caravan, which in the 80s and then partially into the 90s was the largest and string of one-nighters in America. Mm-hmm. And so had all these rooms throughout the Midwest and South and even up North that provided a lot of work for a lot of comedians, for a lot of guys like us, like working class comedians. And he also brought through a bunch of like future stars, you know, like he, you know, in Bloomington, there was a Monday night show at Bear's Place that was called the Comedy Caravan. That was the branding at all the venues that he put these shows on. And that was the longest running one nighter in America. It had been at every Monday night at Bear's Place for 30 years. I got to perform on the 30th anniversary show with Rob Busboom was the headliner. And so Tom had a pretty vast empire for quite a while, and then that started to kind of like empires do, it started to kind of fall apart as the industry itself changed. But he still had things going on, you know, like he owned the club in Louisville forever called the Comedy Caravan, then it got sold to a couple different people throughout the days and changed his name a few times, but he was still booking a couple of one-nighters here and there up to the very end. Not the easiest guy to be around in my
it was tough. Yeah, you
know, I want to be honest. I don't want to like lionize the man.
Right.
He gave me some work and I'm appreciative, but you would pay that tax.
You would.
For the work where he would show up and drunkenly talk to you through the show while you're trying to get ready to go on stage. And so, but he was a big part of particularly Midwest comedy for a long time. And he's no longer there, but you know, it's important that we pay tribute to the people who did lay the tracks to a certain extent. You know,
I agree, man. He gave me my first like college gig at University of Kentucky, and then like,
well, technically, because it wasn't a college gig in the way that it paid like a college gig.
No, but it was like
at a college. Because I did that same show.
It was like $350 in a hotel, though.
Yeah, but when you like say a college gig, like they're not. Oh NACA, no, you know, you're like thousands NACA, of dollars. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Like, this was in like the cafeteria.
Yes.
University of Kentucky.
I believe it's called the Wildcat Lounge. If I'm not mistaken.
The Wildcat Lounge. Yes. And then they changed it to like an actual room, and this kid was running it, and he wanted to be a comic, so Tom entrusted him. Like he did a lot of these other rooms that you talked about, obviously can't be everywhere at once, but it's, you can tell when someone has care to like make, or like they care about the history to make something really good. Because I think I did that show three times, and the third time this kid was running it and it was wonderful. Like we weren't in the cafeteria or in an actual room. It's in the cafeteria. People are just like, it's just chaos.
Yeah,
and no one's really listening. It's just like a free thing that the students can do.
Like we put a PA in this corner of the cafeteria. Now go.
Yeah. I did one for him when I think it was also maybe it was in Tennessee, but it was at like 10:30 in the morning, and it was just me, and he wanted an hour. And like, I think maybe like 40 kids showed up in this giant like hall.
Yeah.
But Tom showed up to talk to me before and after. And I'm just like, I want to go home.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you for the work, but man, I want to go home. He's like, you ever hear that Megan Gailey? It's like, yes.
Well, I'm surprised that he was like using a modern reference, because I think the most famous sort of story about Tom that gets shared is like how much he would love to tell you that Sinbad took a Greyhound bus like 18 hours to come audition for him.
Oh my God.
When Sinbad was like still a college kid in Detroit, at Warren University, and took the slow Greyhound down. And he's like, you know, he would tell you that story and like, yeah, dude, that was 30 years ago. Like, damn. Cool. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
he was always like, letting you know who he was.
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, man.
For sure. Interesting. I mean, like, yeah, rest in peace, Tom. Certainly not the only character in comedy Mm-mm. behind the scenes, but definitely an influential one for a very long time. So Ron Sexton, we have talked about on the podcast before, Donnie Baker, and you know, it's always sad when someone dies.
Yeah,
you know, like I don't.
There's
you know.
There's no human being that knows who I am that doesn't know that Ron and I had our own disagreements.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't appreciate a lot of what he did. I didn't appreciate a lot of his merch, but it is always telling when you see like this outpouring of love and support that a community has for people. And we'd mm-hmm. be lying to say if, you know, we'd be lying to say Ron didn't have that. There
are
so many comics that he affected positively and that mm-hmm. really looked up to him. He was a friend to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
He was a long time part of the Bob and Tom show.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, you know, they're in pain. They lost yeah. someone very abruptly.
Yeah.
Like you said, it wasn't expected with Tom, but it definitely wasn't expected with Ron.
Yeah, Ron was in his 50s and Tom, I think, was probably at least in his 70s at this point. Yeah. And but yeah, I think you nailed it, right? There were a lot of tributes that came out online about Ron and his passing, and a lot of them from people that you and I respect very much. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was like unexpected. You got to see, you know, the connections that happen sometimes in comedy that you don't really, because it's not comics that you would think of as traditional Bob and Tom comics. Never,
right.
never ones that have been like really propped up by that platform and taken on the Bob and Tom short tours and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Comics from outside of that, you know, were like speaking up for him. And so I, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, maybe we don't, none of us know all the different sides to a person. Right.
Right.
And so how tempted were you when you saw those people, paying tribute? Do you want to jump in those comments? Go, yeah, but what about this?
I just
told you like your worst part of yourself.
Yeah, I linked to a drunken rant that I had in 2017 on Facebook. Yeah,
oh, I thought you were gonna say you just linked to some of the things that he's done. Like,
no, yeah,
not even rant, but just some of the things that he posted. And you go, oh, that's the guy. That's the guy you know. All right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't. Obviously never wished death upon these people.
Okay. And so, that's your alibi? You don't, you like, where were you that day? Where?
Yeah. Obviously, officer.
I did text you.
You amongst several other people.
Saying like if you needed an alibi that I got you.
Yeah. I thought it was very, very dark. Someone said, Dwight's having a great week. It's his birthday.
Oh my God.
He released a special and there was a death.
Oh,
so
man.
I am not the person that, you know, dances on people's graves like that. But I thought it was interesting. Like you said, like it's, you know, a lot of people were affected by him in a positive way. They looked up to him and they're really mm-hmm. hurting. So my condolences to those people. Like it's not my story to tell. Like right. my story to tell is just how I felt about the man, but I didn't really know him personally like a lot mm-hmm. of people did.
Right. And then also like you also, because you're a goddamn adult, knew that, you know, that's not the time, because you'll see people that will get into the comments, like someone will pass away and they come in with like making it about themselves or their drama or whatever, you know, like that's not the time for that shit.
Yeah. I didn't go full Ari Shaffir.
Yeah.
So,
well, I thank you for that, because, like, I don't even know what specific thing you're referencing, but I kind of think Ari Shaffir is a huge piece of shit in so many different ways that it doesn't matter. You could have been referencing so many things, because that dude fucking sucks. And so, yeah, man, I agree with you. Like, the only grave, and I've said this publicly, the only grave that I will dance on will be Mitch McConnell's. And I'll be there when the dirt is still fresh.
Yes.
I will fucking drive up and just do a fucking jig, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A man stroked out and we were all like, it's happening.
Yeah,
it's
but,
happening.
You know, but it was just a small stroke while he was in the middle of his speech. So we should let him continue to be a leader and have power.
And he's just so totally nobody thinks, fine. Every Republican's like, he's totally fine. This happens. Yeah. It's fine.
I was talking to my brother.
Never seen a stroke before. I was talking to
my brother about this. Like, they should be an age limit on the top end of it too, man. Like, if you have to be a certain age to run for public office, you know, at the federal level, there should be Biden is too old to do the job, in my opinion. Fucking Nancy Pelosi definitely is compromised. It's not just, you know, Mitch McConnell. There's a lot of it across the board of just these old gray motherfuckers that will not get out of the way.
That's the name of our podcast now for the younger comics listening, wondering why we won't move to a bigger market. These old motherfuckers that won't get out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how it's referenced. Yeah.
Speaking of old, I went to see, this has nothing to do with anything, but I went to see the Barbie movie and it was fantastic. And
it's great.
It's amazing. Everyone should go see it. And I'm loving reading all these people. Oh. These grown men freaking out about a movie not made for them. It's like, fucking mind your business, dude. It's like, I don't know what type of sad life that is.
It's just outrage culture, which is what so much of America is now. And that's what those people are addicted to. You know, it's this idea that you have to be pissed off about something. So go find it. Go find the thing to be pissed off about.
Yeah. Barbie movie, The Little Mermaid. Should be how little it's ridiculous, but I'd be lying to say I didn't enjoy their fucking uncomfortableness.
Yeah.
And like, this is great storytelling. It's a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. It was way funnier than I thought it was going to be. It's hilarious. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Now, you did talk earlier in the podcast about seeing Oppenheimer. Did you do the thing where you went to both on the same day?
No.
That a lot of people on the internet were doing. Yeah.
No.
No.
I didn't.
Yeah. That's a long time to sit in the theater because Oppenheimer is like 3 hours long, right?
Yeah. 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 It's long. And I also like to think about a movie for a couple hours after watching it so I can like take it all in.
Yeah.
I don't even like doing the drive-in anymore, the double feature.
Mm-hmm.
Because Oppenheimer is pretty fucking heavy. And there's a lot of information I didn't know about his life and the consequences. And I don't know if you know this, Matt. Government's kind of corrupt sometimes.
What? No.
Fucked up. What? Oh. Yeah, crazy, dude.
No.
but yeah, I was in a different mind space to go see the Barbie movie, which is like, and then I was pleasantly surprised. I had heard great things about it, but I didn't think it was going to be that damn funny. It's a funny movie.
I'm looking forward to it. I think Margot Robbie's great. Like, far she hasn't really been in anything that I can think of that's been bad. Like, you know, I'm sure there's been smaller things or whatever, but like even something like did you see Suicide Squad, like the second one?
Yeah.
Like the James Gunn one is fucking amazing. It's so good. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So I think I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know when that'll be, but definitely looking forward to seeing it. And also, for no other reason, I want to go to the theater and see it just to continue to piss off these Ben Shapiro types who are railing against it. It's like, let's just bump those. Let's keep it number one for another weekend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, let's just keep them mad. But you nailed it. Like, these guys are pissed off at a movie that's not made for them. You know, it's just like, I used to think the same thing about my music hipster friends who get like, they want to talk shit about Justin Bieber when he came out. It's like, it's not for you. Dude, it's for 13-year-old girls. Why are you mad
that this is exists? A child.
Like this, why are you mad that this exists in the world?
God damn.
The parallel I always thought of it is like somebody going, these fucking ramps to get into stores. I don't like that. Well, the ramps are not for you. Use the stairs.
That's perfect.
Yes.
That's perfect.
Yeah. But anyway, hey, man, we have done a full hour of the podcast and we covered some good topics, I feel like, in there. And it's hopefully everyone has heard the cheer in my voice and is not going to send me any more like, hey, dude, you OK? emails.
He's getting welfare checks at home.
Dude, I have one episode of the podcast where I express some doubt about my career.
No, you're supposed to be our rock.
All right. Yeah.
You got shows coming up?
I do have shows coming up. Am I continuing to sort of honor the things that were already on the calendar? This Friday, I will be hosting the graduation show for the comedy class that I teach in Carmel at the Center for the Performing Arts. That is a free show. It's a good little group of people this year. A lot of women. I only have one male student who made it all the way to the end.
That's amazing.
A couple of them had to drop because of various reasons. So it's eight women and one man. Going to be doing some comedy for the very first time on Friday, August 4th. At the studio theater there at the Center for the Performing Arts. And then on Saturday, this 5th, August 5th, I will be at Helltown in Cincinnati at the Comet Bar.
Yes.
For two shows, early love and a late show, co-headlining with my buddy, Mishka Shibali, who I love very much. And it should be a great show. Mishka, people don't know, is a musician who has sort of drifted into comedy because his songs are kind of dark and funny, and then he got funnier and funnier like with the in-between parts, and now it's kind of like half stand-up, half music. The way that I kind of describe him is he's sort of a like a dark, grizzled Jonathan Richman, who's always been kind of in that world of being like a funny musician, you know. And so I'm excited about that. We're going to flip flop. I'm going to close the early show. He's going to close the late show. And, but we're both doing 30, maybe a little bit over 30.
It's a great room.
It's a great room. Love Wayne, who runs that. Wayne, when you die, I will dedicate an entire episode to you, my friend. You'll get a glowing full episode long, tribute to you. And hopefully we won't do that for another 50 years. But yeah, that's where I'm going to be this weekend. Tickets are on sale for Helltown online. If you just Google it, that'll get you there. I've heard the tickets are going fast, which is cool. What about you, my friend? Where are you at this weekend?
I am at the Comedy Attic featuring for Erin Jackson. I'm very excited. I've never met her, but I've been a fan for a long time. So two shows on the 4th and two shows on the 5th at the Comedy Attic website. And then I do want to plug on August 11th, I will be at Commonwealth in Dayton, Kentucky. I'm doing that show. Heard great things. So if you're near Cincinnati or if you're near, where the fuck, I think Dayton's just like over the,
it's right across the river. It's right across the river from Cincinnati. So basically if you, where Covington is, if you just keep on that main drag going south,
sure,
then you get to Dayton. I am actually going to be at the Commonwealth the following Friday on the 18th. So go to the Commonwealth's website, buy those tickets on the 11th for Dwight, buy your tickets for me on the 18th, and have back-to-back Fridays with your hosts of Matt and Dwight Just Might. That'd be fun, right?
Yeah. And send in some questions. We didn't do any questions. We did a full we'll take your Tommy Davidson or Bill Bellamy questions. Maybe we'll just get into like a full celebrity death match type episode next week. But
I thought you were gonna get into a full like how do you tell black people apart episode.
That's a different podcast, my
some
friend.
tips from Dwight. Dwight's gonna really break it down for us, you know, as a black man, how do you tell? Email us those questions. We would love to have them, because obviously when we don't have questions, we get into problematic areas like that. So send us those questions to our Gmail account, mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening. You know, we give shout outs every now and then, and this guy's had a shout out a few times, but I know they consistently listens and always drops me an uplifting note and things that he liked about each episode. So a special shout out to Nate Beckman. Thanks, Nate, for continuing to listen and support the podcast. I appreciate you, buddy.